You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Starting at that very first paragraph, Paul writes this: "See to it that no one takes you captive by philosophy and empty deceit, according to human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the world, and not according to Christ. For in him the whole fullness of the deity dwells bodily, and you have been filled in him, who's the head of all authority. In him you were also circumcised with a circumcision made without hands, by putting off the body of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ. Having been buried with him in baptism, you were also raised with him through faith in the powerful working of God, who raised him from the dead. And you, who were dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made alive together with him, having forgiven all our trespasses, by cancelling the record of debt that stood against us with its legal demands. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross. He disarmed the rulers and authorities and put them to open shame by triumphing over them in him." There's a lot going on in that passage, and we'll unpack a bit of it. We all want change. Well, perhaps not you. You're perfect, right? We all want change. People heard of the new diet called the 5-2 diet? Is it 5 days of fast? No, it's the other way, isn't it? 5 days of eating normally, 2 days of fasting. Part of that, I think, is about this desire to control. At least if we can't change, at least we can control ourselves and control our bodies and be calling the shots on ourselves. Seems to me, I've tried it, seems to me if you were successful at it, it'd be empowering. You know, I've fasted for these 2 days. I'm calling the shots on myself and my body. I'm not going to try it. I think I'd be very discouraged and I think I'd get through it. We want change. Some of us are open about it. Some of us are a bit more hidden and it comes in the guise of control. I think the more real we are about who we are, actually the more we should want to change. The more real we are about who we are, the more we should want to change. I was looking up this whole idea of change on the web, and I came across this article, this blog post by a guy called John Shaw. He writes regularly online and writes for a group called the Huffington Post. He says this, a fair few chunks of this are quotes. He said he was sitting at his desk in a typical week, feeling regretful about a semi-destructive thing he'd done recently. And he said he suddenly just had this moment of clarity about himself for 3 or 4 seconds where he realized, and he says it much strongly this, that he was a complete mongrel. He says, it just dawned on me, and let me quote him, "I was selfish. I was an emotional weakling who's always doing and saying whatever best served my own needs at the time. I never lied, but I'd fudge the truth here and there if it didn't really hurt anybody and would help things roll my way. I never cheated, but life is complex and sometimes one has to make deals that more directly serve a larger good. I wanted to help others, but there were so many good shows on TV, especially after a long, rough day at work." He said his whole view of himself in that moment was kind of deconstructed. He thought of himself kind of like the Batman who did good things. And then this kind of reality is he just kind of looked at his life and his decisions kind of crashing down on him. And he said, "I realized I was the Penguin. I was the Penguin and I could escape it." And he said, but that's not the worst thing about it. The worst part was that what struck me was that I had this very real knowledge that I was never, ever, ever going to change. Ever, never, ever going to change. He said, because for all my life up until this point, I had been at various points trying to do better. And I never was. He says, he said, "Miserable mediocrity was the best I could manage. On my best days, I was the Penguin." Have you ever felt that? You know, that awful kind of crushing realization about who you are, and you don't want to be who you are, and you wish that you could do something different or be something different or feel something. I caught myself in just that situation the other day. I have a bunch of boys as children. I'm not as slaves as children. And I just lost it. I hate yelling. I hate it when they yell at each other, I was just yelling. In the middle of yelling at them, I was just thinking, "Why are you yelling, Glenn? Stop yelling." And I was still yelling. I started yelling at myself. We want to be different. And I think when we kind of, the more real we are about ourselves, I think the more that ought to be a right response. miserable mediocrity, is what this writer said. Well, here's the good news. Here's the good news. The Bible says it's the power of resurrection that brings change. It's the power of the resurrection, Jesus' resurrection, that brings change. Listen to what Paul writes to the Christians in the city of Ephesus. He writes with a kind of a desperate intensity, if you read all of it. He tells them what he prays for them, and he's got this desperate intensity because he wants them to see how big an impact this will make. He says, I want you to grasp in your heart the incredible, unmeasurable power that God directs towards you Christian believers, the power of the resurrection. Let me read it to you here. He says this. He says, I want you to realize the immeasurable greatness of his, that is God's power toward us who believe, according to the working of his great might that he worked in Jesus Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places. There's a lot going on there, but he's basically saying, you know that the power that God used to bring Jesus back from the dead, that power, that immeasurable power, that unimaginable, unconquerable power, that is the kind of power that God is directing toward you, Ephesian Christians. And Paul goes, I want you to grasp that. I want you to see that that power is being brought to bear for you. It's the power of the resurrection. And he picks up on the ascension, but we're not going to go there. So let's dig into the resurrection and see how God brings change. See, the first thing here that picking up on the personal life about the resurrection is that it brings change because it leads to a changed existence. It brings change because it leads to a changed existence. When someone becomes a Christian, Paul writes, two things happen. He says the whole self is spiritually killed and the whole self is spiritually resurrected from the dead. Let me show it to you from this passage. Again, fair bit going on because Paul's in the middle of an argument where these Christians in the city of Colossae are starting to move away from following Jesus, and he's trying to help them grasp the depth of what they have in Jesus. So he's got strong language. He says this, in Jesus, you Colossae Christians, you were circumcised with a circumcision made without hands by putting off the body of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, having been buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him through faith. He says, when you became a Christian, when you were baptized, when you publicly converted and announced that you followed Jesus, because the baptism was the public kind of thing you did. He says, your whole self was circumcised. He says, if you became a believer, there was a cut. But a cut not of the anatomy, but of the whole self. See, why is he using this language of circumcision? Because he wants to help us see how radical it is. When, you know, a Jewish male lost, you know, had their foreskin cut, that was a radical thing to show that they were a member of God's people. Using that same radical language. But you see what it says there? He says, when you were in Jesus, he says, you were buried with him in baptism. So he's saying, when you became a follower of Jesus, your whole self was cut off because you died with Jesus. And your whole self was cut off because you were raised with Jesus. He's got the death of resurrection in his mind there. What's going on there? Well, it's this idea that what happens to Jesus happens to the followers of Jesus. Jesus died and was raised. So those that follow Jesus are spiritually united to that work, died and raised as well. But you are thinking, yeah, okay, sure, but why? Well, the point is because we needed a changed existence. We needed a completely changed existence. See, if the problem of the brokenness of the world and the things that go wrong in the world is us, people, then what needs to be changed is people, us. But we know that laws don't change us. We know that self-control and discipline don't change our hearts. We know that different foods don't change us. We know that going to special buildings with special symbols don't change us. There's plenty of evidence of that in the news all the time. The external things don't change us. We need to change from here, but we can't change ourselves. So God does something radical. In Jesus, we die and raised again. We need a changed existence. See, why is that? There's some things you cannot do and expect no consequences. There's just some things you cannot do and expect no consequences. I've got a mate, and one night he got incredibly drunk. and he lived in Sydney, and he wanted to get from one part of one suburb to another part of the suburb. And it was kind of, eastern suburbs of Sydney is kind of complicated. He decided that the best and shortest way to do that would be to take a shortcut through a power station. You know those ones that you see where they've got the barbed wire, they've got the voltage signs and the barbed wire, and they've got those things that actually look like they straight out of the Frankenstein kind of movie with those kind of bits going around the wires all curly. One of those. He thought, I'll just climb over the fence and walk through. It'll save me, you know, half an hour, 2 hours. He tried to transgress the law of the substation. Thought, I'll just go in here. And that's what he did. And he was blown out of the place by the electricity. They found him flung over the top and outside of the barbed wire fence. The reason they found him was that the suburb lost its lighting because it shorted out because the voltage went through his body. It came in through here and ripped a hole. That muscle there, that just was one great big gaping hole. Went in there, came out through his feet. He was lucky to be alive. There's just some things you cannot do and not suffer the consequences. Well, that's the picture that's given here for us in Colossians. It says, you Christians, you were dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh. You, at some point or another, before God, had stepped into this space where God said, do not go, do not do these things with your body, don't think these things with your mind, don't act that way towards each other, don't act that way towards me. And they'd gone with their body, with their flesh. Oh no, doesn't matter. It's a shortcut. It makes life easier. It helps things roll my way. Oh, you know, it's okay. He says, no, you were dead in your trespasses. There's some things you cannot do. You cannot trespass into that space without suffering consequences. Now, you think, well, hang on. Here's this language of trespass and transgress. Is that because God loves rules? He loves just having boundaries. He loves having high voltage sections all kind of locked off. Well, no, think about it. I've got children and I've got rules at home. I've got rules like don't punch each other and don't kick each other, especially in the middle of rumbles. You know, four boys, rumbles happen. But one of the rules is when there's kicks and punches, the rumble stops. Now, why do I have that rule? Is it because I love rules? No, it's actually because I love my boys. They need to know how to love each other. So the rule shows them how to love each other. But there's another rule, isn't it? They're not allowed to yell at Catherine or me. They're not allowed to be insolent. They're not allowed to argue with us in kind of... Is that because I love rules again? No, because they need to know how to love us. See, God's rule, God's laws, are actually laws of love. They show you what it means to love people and to love God. And that's why the transgression matters so much. The Bible says that the Colossians Christians and all people had broken God's framework for life. We regularly walk into this place, this space that says high voltage, danger, don't go there, you'll die. And we go there again and again. And so the Bible says we owe our very lives to God. Our lives are forfeit. It just hasn't, the consequences haven't fallen down. But then God did something incredible. Paul puts it like this. He says that Jesus became that lightning rod for God's anger on his death on the cross. He says this, that Jesus, God, cancelled the record of debt that stood against us with its legal demands, and he set it aside, nailing it to the cross. Saying when Jesus was on the cross, he was a lightning rod for God's anger. He stepped into that high voltage perimeter, and God's anger was on him. All those transgressions, all those broken rules, all those broken laws, all those broken acts of love, Jesus suffered the consequences. But not only that, God did something incredible. He raised Jesus to life again, and he defeated death. So this, that's what's happened, that leads to a changed existence for those that follow Jesus. Let me quickly show you four things that ought to change. There's a few things going on. This is from Colossians chapter 3, but I'm going to touch them very quickly and great to read over. This helps four things change. Firstly, it changes the heart. It changes the heart. See what it says there? It says, if you've been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above. The word seek is the heart word. It's the pursue word. You know, seek good. Heat-seeking missile. It's the heart word. It's about the passions. It's about the affections. It's about what you want. He's saying the heart needs to change. If you follow Jesus and you've been raised with Jesus, the heart should change. What the heart pursues, what the heart desires, needs to change. And so he commands them. That's actually a command. He says, seek the things that are above. And who is above? Jesus in his rule. Seek Jesus. He's not saying, if you like. He's saying, do it. It's a command. What else needs to change? Your mind needs to change. He says, set your mind. So thoughtful decisions, planning, thinking, growing in knowledge. Set your mind. So your heart, your mind, or rather, you know, kind of going with the H's, your head. What would please Jesus? What would honour him? That's part of this changed existence that can be brought about. And then he says another one, changed desires. But this way, it's kind of like the heart thing, but it's a rejection of some of the things of the heart. You see it there in sentence 5. He says, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry. All those kind of words you list there, most of them are desire words or passion words. Sexual immorality is about our sexual desire. The impurity word, again, is a kind of a desire word. And he's got passion, evil desire. So your heart is to seek this, and it's not to seek that. How do you not seek it? You put it to death. But that's not enough. You can't just say, I shouldn't do this. You can't just have rules or laws and say, I'm not going to do this anymore. The heart loves. So the heart needs to not love this and to love Jesus. And the same with the mind. And he's got a fourth command. Then he says, you must put them all away. It's almost the word for disrobing, throwing off, like if you had a dirty garment. He says, throw away. He wants changed actions. Changed actions. So four things flowing. Changed heart, changed head, changed desires in terms of rejection, and changed action. And at the end of Colossians, we don't have room to go into it now. He picks up on that in sentence 9, the very changed existence that underwrites that. He says, put to death because of the old self, put on the new self. You have a changed existence, so live it out. And you're thinking, but I've tried. And the thing is, if we keep trying on our own strength and own merit, we won't change. See, we need the power of the resurrection, which is the power of the Spirit. See, the power of change comes from the power of the Spirit, which is the Spirit of resurrection. Look at this sentence. Right, Paul writes this to the Roman Christians. If the Spirit of him, that is God, who raised Jesus from the dead, dwells in you, he who raised Jesus Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit who dwells in you. He's saying, if you're a Christian, well, then you have the Spirit of God. And that is the same Spirit who did what? Resurrected Jesus. So what will it do with your broken, sinful body? Well, it will give life. And at this point, he's not, actually, because of the context, he's not talking about a future life resurrected from the dead. He's talking about life lived under God in a way that pleases God. He's saying you will have that. Not to the full extent that you could have it, but you will have it. Because the next sentence he says, you are no longer in debt to your flesh. He says, you can have life. So that's who we need to ask to change us. God. We say, God, that Spirit, the Spirit who raised Jesus from the dead, work in me through him. Change me. And that's great. Because it means we won't despair when we're not changing or the change is slow and it seems kind of like a glacier. Keep going back and saying, God, you raised Jesus from the dead. You have that power of change. change me. I think you might be sitting there thinking, well, you know, I've met a lot of people who claim Christianity and they don't seem to be any different from around them. Well, give them time. That's one answer. Give them time. Maybe it's just particularly slow change and it actually will take decades to see. But there will be change. There will be change. Let me tell you about one story of change that I stumbled across as I was reading on this topic and thinking about it. This is Brian Welch. Anyone know who he is? Anyone know who Brian Welch is? Previous generation. He was the lead guitarist in the band Korn, what was called New Metal, coming out of California in the 90s. Massive band. If you look at them on YouTube playing gigs, you just see these huge stadiums. They were just on the up and up. Their third album, when it came out, basically launched at number 3 in the US charts. It didn't start and climb. It just kind of went on sale. It's number 3 in the US charts. This was Brian Welch. But while that was happening over the 90s in the band, Brian Welch's life, and I think his band name is called Head, was going like this. He was addicted to speed, methamphetamines, hugely, deeply addicted. He could not get off them. At one stage, it was tragic. It affected not just him, but it affected his wife. Even when his wife was pregnant, she also was addicted to speed. And then when the baby came along, they had this period where they're actually able to put that aside for a little while. And then he went on tour again, and he started drinking beer again and got back on speed, and so did his wife. And then eventually, their marriage fell apart. She left him. And he was just going further downhill, just deeply, tragically downhill. And he said a turning point for him was that he had custody of his daughter. She was singing. She was only 2 or 3, and she was singing one of the Korn songs, one of his songs, which was a song about how you wanted to have sex all day and nothing else kind of could fill your mind. You didn't have space for anything else. It was all consuming. And he just thought, what? I don't... Like, he knew that she didn't know what she was singing, but he just thought, my world is... Look what it's doing to her world. But he couldn't change. And he thought about taking his life. He was in huge despair. And then somehow, amazingly, he was in business with a couple of Christians. Now, I'm not in the music business, but in another area where he's trying to develop his money. And he went along to a church. So he went along to this church, and he heard the sermon about Jesus, and he actually gave his life, he said. But then that night, he said he went home, and he rolled up a bill, and he snorted a line of speed and sat there and thought, what's it all about? And that started this horrendous week where he said he alternated between reading the Bible in massive chunks and getting as high as a kite on speed, coming off that, reading the Bible in massive chunks. And he just said it was horrendous, this awful thing, as he was just having this battle played out in his body, thinking, you know, will I change? Where will it go? What will happen to me? And he said, I was one night away from taking my life, or one moment away from killing myself, when I came across a passage that said, you are dead in your sin and wickedness, and God's judgment is about to fall. And he said, I just cried out to God, God, Father, save me. And he got all his drugs, and he rushed to the toilet, and he stuck them in, and he flushed them. And amazingly, he said, he hasn't touched drugs since. Now, it doesn't happen for everyone who becomes a Christian, but he had this radical change in his life, this radical transformation. Incredible. And he eventually split up with a band, and that was caused all sorts of problems. And then he wrote this book called Save Me From Myself. And he wrote a song about it. See if I can find the words. I had them typed out here somewhere. He said, save me from myself. I can't quit. I've tried it. Your love, denied it. I can't fake it. I hate it. And that kind of just gets repeated a few times. And he says, please help me, God. Save me from myself. I'm begging you, God. Save me from my hell. And that's exactly what God has done. An amazing story of change. It doesn't always happen that way. But he has a new existence. A completely incredible new existence through that power of God to bring change that he could not bring himself. The power of the resurrection. Let me open it up for questions or comments.